Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Huawei, much in the news these last years because of suspicions that it is not secure, that it is a bad actor. I welcome Jonathan Pelson, the author of a new book, Wireless Wars, China's Dangerous Domination of 5G, and How We Are Fighting Back. Jonathan, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. And congratulations. I go to a scene in your book, Colin Golder, arriving in China at the behest of the United Nations Funds in Trust. He stays at the Minzu Hotel, the date 1980. He takes a walk around town in Beijing, breathing in the coal dust that fills the air. And he sees satisfied young people because they have a watch, a bicycle, a sewing machine, and a radio. Three rounds and a sound. However, he's there to present about telecommunications to Chinese engineers. He walks into a room filled with engineers in identical mouse suits, men and women. What is he telling him, John? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. So nice to be here. And Colin Golder is up in front of that room, and he's trying to tell them how to build a telecom network. You have a country here that has a GDP in 1980 of about $195 per person, which was about half of Sudan at the time, and 1% or so of the GDP of the United States. They had one phone line per 500 people, and they understood in China that one of the first ways to build an economy, and Deng Xiaoping was figured out this needed to be done, is to create communications channels. Companies, businesses can talk to each other, people can talk. And they needed to have someone come in and explain really what a phone network was. They had hand cranked phones like we had half a century earlier in rural parts of the United States. That was still not uncommon in China of 1980.
We go to AT&T headquarters, which I imagine in a vast green canvas campus somewhere between here and Mars. But in any event, in the room is a collection of the senior executives, the innovative executives of a company that dominates telecommunications, especially because of its Bell Labs, also in New Jersey. A man named Jim Brewington is in the room watching a presentation by McKinsey and Company about the practicality of investing in and building a wireless division. This dates from something that happened 7 years before when an engineer at Motorola had called an engineer at AT&T on what he called a wireless phone, a great big brick box. That was 7 years before. Motorola, I learned from you, pursued that. AT&T hesitated. What did the McKinsey study say of the possibility of investing in wireless, John?
Well, you know, my kids tell me I have to explain who Bell Labs even is. You know, I look at this company, nine Nobel laureates in physics in one company. But this is a company that not only invented the telephone, but invented sound movies, invented stereo, invented transistors, lasers, solar panels, communication satellites. This was the world's most brilliant company. They had invented cellular communications, and now they had McKinsey in there, who's the great consulting firm of the world, who was asked to tell them, should we invest in this new mobile phone thing, the cellular phone thing? McKinsey told them, there is no future in this. We looked at the market, we interviewed hundreds and hundreds of people, thousands of people, and what we found is that the market for cellular phones is going to tap out at around 900,000 people total. And we found what people said is they really like pay phones and beepers. pagers if they want to be in touch when they're on the road. And, you know, this is the biggest, smartest company in the world talking to the biggest, smartest industrial company in the world. And they were trying to make a prediction. You know, the guys there were not stupid, but they were making a prediction on no data points. And they didn't understand that this 80-pound suitcase in the trunk of your Cadillac Fleetwood would be in the palm of your hand, and that $5 a minute charge would be unlimited calling in just a few years. So at the time, they told AT&T, there's nothing in this. Now, when they said there'd be just under 1 million people by the year 2000, the actual number turned out to be just under 1 billion people that had cell phones. And penetration wasn't 0.5% of the market. Penetration was about 100% in a lot of the world.
Jim Brewington was in the room. He watched people leave. He knew this was not connecting to what he'd heard about wireless. It is now 11 years later. Brewington is in charge of AT&T Wireless. There's competition. I've heard of it, but I've not actually seen one yet. I think my brother had one because he traveled a lot, but I don't know whether he used it in 91. Brew calls in a 23-year-old engineer from Ohio State, David Hurd. He tells David, go to China. You go to China for us. And you present to China. You deal with China and see what they've got for us. What did David Hurd find when he went to China?
Well, I find it incredible that this company sent a 23-year-old off to China to negotiate on behalf of the world's biggest communications company, how to set up the first joint ventures for a factory in China. But Brewington made the right choice. David Hurd, when I was talking to him about the book, interviewing him, I said, so you were going to school nights while you worked at AT&T? He said, no, John, I was going to school full time. I was working at AT&T nights. I said, okay. Well, he had a reputation for energy. The Chinese were going to wear him down. He said they met with us 7 a.m. we would start, 7 or 8 every morning. We'd go all day until late at night, 7 days a week. And they figured these Americans, we're going to wear him down. He's just going to want to sign a deal to get home. And they wanted IP sharing. They wanted the state-of-the-art digital cellular equipment. But Hurd was given direction by Brewington, don't let them have the good stuff in the factory. They can take the old first-generation cellular and refurbish it. That's all we want the Chinese factory to do.
That was the 1G, John?
That was 1G. We're going to pull out old 1G gear, and they can fix it up. And it's not even digital. It's analog equipment. And China was not happy about this. They did not like getting treated like a second-class country. But basically what Brewington was doing is taking discarded equipment from American cellular carriers. Instead of throwing it away, he was shipping it to China, letting the factory fix it up, adjust it to the local market, and upgrading the American companies to 2G digital, where you had texting and some more capabilities. And week after week, they would wear away at David Hurd and the lawyer who was with them, and just figured they'd break them. But they held tough. And I liked the story how the lawyer there sat there quietly in the meetings. And right towards the end, he pulled David aside and said, here's the numbers they need. Here's their metrics for beating us. And David said, how do you know all this? He said, I speak fluent Mandarin. I just didn't want them to know it. I could understand what they were saying to each other when the interpreter was away.
Yes, he married a Chinese woman.
That's right.
And the Chinese hadn't yet learned to do a trace on the people they're dealing with. I think they've improved their style since then. Now, it's 1992. The factory opens. So AT&T, which is now Lucent. Is it Lucent yet?
That's right. Yeah, it's Lucent. Not quite. It was still AT&T equipment at the time.
All right. But they're now dealing with a factory in China. And at the same time, a man named Ren, about this time, is getting together, so goes the story, investment from his friends, $5,000. Who is Ren? What do we need to know about him at this moment?
Ren Zhengfei was the founder of Huawei. He was not a senior intel officer in the Chinese army, the People's Liberation Army, which I've heard some people say. He was not a big deal there because, and you know that because he left the army during a downsizing, and he knocked around with some oil companies for a while and really didn't have the career path you would expect a senior guy who was being assigned to set up Huawei. He set it up on his own. It was a private company, and he was just was and is a very smart, hardworking, driven manager. He raised a little bit of money, started importing fire alarms from Hong Kong, and then started importing a low-end switch, the kind that you would put in your office to connect the desktop phones to each other, not a big telecom switch. But he was just someone who had a lot more drive than a lot of his colleagues who said, we'll just take whatever the American companies or European companies give us. And he wanted to create his own products. Now, it doesn't mean he wanted to invent them from scratch, but he got funding. And then the government realized that he had a better product than the government run company. And they said, we need you to build out the military's communications network in China.
They were dealing initially with PBX, right? Which is connecting in offices, a lot of phones together. Nothing to do with my iPhone. No connection, no imagination whatsoever about wireless phones.
Very low end wired connections. In fact, it was a Mitel switch that he was importing on behalf of Mitel. And suddenly Mitel noticed their numbers going down, but they saw their switches were still being sold. So what he was doing is he was ripping off the Mitel PBX in the offices.
Of course he was.
And, you know, and that was the beginning. And I spoke to one of the guys who was there, and he said, we just shrugged and said, you know what, let's just sell him the chipset. We'll make some money off of our knockoff switches being sold. And that's what they did.
All right. Here are the elements in Jonathan Pelson's book. Can you see the future? We've got Huawei founded by a knockaround guy. We've got Lucent semi-understanding that the wireless market is big. We've got Americans saying, let's do them a favor. We've got Chinese showing up in droves saying, what's this? What can we do with this? And we have a lot of pity going on because China's not a member of the World Trade Organization yet. When we come back with Jonathan Pelson, Wireless Wars, State Security Enters the Scene. I'm John Battle.